Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for staying with me today. Thanks for hanging around. My website is www.jbsba.com. And I'm excited about Wayne Cruz being back with us. Wayne is the director of technology studies at the Cato Institute in beautiful downtown Washington, D.C. He's our good friend. He's been with us a long time. He's the guy who helps us understand what's going on out there in the world of technology, public policy, and a lot of different things, especially, for example, the spam bill, which he's going to start talking. He's going to talk to us about from the at the beginning when he joins us, which is right now. Wayne, welcome back to the show.
Jim, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
It's good to have you back, Wayne. Now, if memory serves, there was a bill called Can Spam that
That's
was
right.
a federal law that the president signed into law in December of 2003. That was to, number one, supersede all state spam laws. And number two, shine a weaponized laser beam on all spam in the world and eradicate it forevermore. Now, that was the plan, but here it is. We're already into 2004. The law went into effect January 1st. And somehow, Wayne, I'm still getting some spam.
Somehow you're still getting spam. Well,
how could that be?
How could that be?
I want my money. I want my money back, Wayne.
Washington passes a law and it doesn't work. Now, how could that happen?
Well, yeah.
You and I, we talked about spam a good bit in the past, and one of the things that we mentioned was, you know, the bad actors who were already breaking the law by sending fraudulent spam or forging headers of emails and things like that aren't going to stop breaking the law just because you add a new layer. A lot of the spam was already illegal without legislation, given that it was fraudulent.
I can just see those guys laughing and maybe even having a little party the day that the president signed it.
You better believe it. And plus, we have this global internet, which means that even if you were to stop it in the U.S., a lot of the activity could just happen and just originate overseas. But basically, as we talked about before, the problem with email is that you cannot authenticate senders. It's very difficult to authenticate who's sending an email. So you can't tell who's a trusted source and who's not. And also it's just the fact that you can't price email. You know, it would be nice if you could charge a fraction of a cent, you know, whenever a stranger sends you an email. In order for you to read it, they would have to pay you a fraction of a cent or a nickel or a dollar or whatever you set your fee to be. So it's the lack of pricing and the lack of authentication that's the problem. And legislation didn't do anything to solve that. What the legislation did is things like this. Well, you have to put a true header on the email. You have to show who the email originates from, and you have to provide a street address, and you have to provide a way to unsubscribe.
Phone number. Way to unsubscribe.
But Jim,
basically, all it did was it put extra. The immediate result of all of it is it put extra requirements on the good guys.
That's right. It put extra court requirements on the good guys. And for the most part, the good guys who were tiptoeing into email and experimenting with it were already doing those things on their own and starting to do those things on their own. I mean, they wouldn't necessarily put a street address because in the digital world, you don't always want to do that. Either.
Other than the street address, which as you say, just wasn't required. I mean, they knew where my website is, and I'm we're all over the place. Other than the street address, which we now put, all the new requirements we've been doing for 4 years.
That's right.
We'd already been doing those things.
That's just it. Most legitimate actors were already doing those things, or were developing best practices, or they were doing things that were even better than what the legislation would specify. That's the way legitimate people do it. And just because you pass a law doesn't mean all the bad guys who've been out there for the past years are suddenly going to stop what they're doing. And, the law went into effect on January 1st, and there's still spam pouring in. In fact, just the other day, we got a note from from our top administrators at Cato that they were installing a new spam filter on our system. And I was joking with Bill, the guy who was heading it up. I said, well, why are you doing that, Bill? They outlawed spam on the first, so we can't be getting any spam. but it's pouring in. And you and I talked about different things before. We talked about different solutions like challenge and response accounts, you know, the accounts where if a stranger sends you an email, they have to jump through a hurdle,
right,
in a sense, by entering a password or something like that. So you have those kinds of solutions emerging. And the big players, the Microsofts and the Earthlinks, the AOLs, you know, the ISPs and the software makers are getting together to remedy what are the real problems, which is the authentication and pricing.
Right. Stand by. Wayne, I want to ask you more about this authentication and pricing idea when we come back after these messages. And we've got a lot more to come with our good friend Wayne Cruz. He is the Director of Technology Studies at the Cato Institute. 2012. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Wayne Cruz is our guest, and he's the Director of Technology Studies at the Cato Institute. And Wayne, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about Cato?
Well, we are a libertarian think tank. Cato just had its 26th anniversary.
Congratulations.
And we thank you. We work on the range of, I've been there 3 years. We work on the range of issues at Cato from antitrust reform, health care reform, Medicare, Social Security privatization is what really kicked off Cato in the early days, tax and budget reform. And my bundle of issues is regulatory reform and technology policy, like the spam and privacy issues we talk about a lot, and general regulation, you know, regulation of small business, regulation of business in general.
You know, and folks, don't forget their website is cato.org,
C-A-T-O.org.
.org, and you can find all the things that Wayne writes about on their site. Also, Adam Thierer, Mike Tanner, a number of other folks who are at Cato there. You can find their stuff there, and you can just read it for free if you want to. They make it available to you.
That's right. All of our policy papers are available for free. You can read them in HTML format or download a PDF. But you can find all of our reports there, from privatization to regulatory reform.
Wayne, you know, the technology is something that we cover with our technology experts, and I'm sure that there's a lot of technology out there, and we run into it ourselves when we work with our subscribers to our publication, our online publication, and I'm not sure though that I understand this the part about paying for or charging somebody for an email. I mean, I know there've been some things floating about charging people a nickel to send or a penny to send every email, which is not going to fly. And I'm going to be the one leading the charge to stop that from happening.
Right.
But what about this thing about charging to open one or to read one?
Right. Well, look, let me say, it will be a voluntary system. There've been rumors and whatnot over email taxes and things like that for years. None of that's true. What this notion is about is a voluntary system where people, if they chose to, could charge for an email. They wouldn't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of proposals, because the spam problem has gotten so bad, unsolicited mail problem has gotten so bad, and it's not just email from businesses. You know, there's resumes and political emails and solicitations of every sort that people are getting. But the idea is that if you can authenticate senders, and if you can tell who's trying to get into your inbox, there ought to be a way through software or through hardware or, you know, changes in the internet architecture to make it possible for people to be able to charge for an email.
For an email, for the people you want to charge.
For the people you want to charge.
You wouldn't have to charge everybody.
Everybody who's on your whitelist, their email will just come right in.
Right.
And in fact, even if a person... Some proposals I've heard is, even if you read a stranger's email and it was something that you wanted, you still don't charge them. You don't have to charge them. So it'd be a totally voluntary system. But the problem, Jim, is doing something like that with the Internet as far along as it is, is such a tremendous undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
It would take such an industry effort, and it would take such a level of outrage with spam to get it going. And maybe we're approaching that point. I don't know.
I'm pretty outraged at spam.
Right.
And I don't know. I think it seems to me that the technology that the better solution is to deploy the technology to find and destroy any email that doesn't comply with certain characteristics.
That may be the way it goes, because even if you do a pay system, you've still got to have authentication of senders,
and that's what
we really lack.
And who's going to pay a half a cent? I mean, I don't. To me, the pay system is anyway. I just think that the way to do this is to say, look, this is the way. You know, it would seem to me, Wayne, that this would be a way for each country to maybe even control their borders if this is something they wanted to do. Is if an email comes to somebody through an ISP in the United States, that it has to have these four or five markers, and if it doesn't, then it's just going to automatically get destroyed.
Well, that's what Microsoft and Yahoo and others are looking at ways, because really to solve this problem, the ISPs, because now they're just passing off traffic to each other unasked.
Right.
You know, they really are going to have to put their heads together and come up with kinds of protocols for what will be an acceptable email. If any email has a disguised heading, they could get together and decide, okay, we're no longer going to support these kinds of emails, and they completely get dropped out of the system. They
come
simply
up with
go
some,
into a black
come up
hole.
With some industry standards, some ISP
right.
industry
so
standards.
There isn't, right, so there isn't any business of it appearing in your inbox, and there also isn't any business of it. You know, they always complain about these Viagra ads ricocheting across their systems and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't follow certain standards, and what the industries are doing are coming up with kinds of digital seals or certificates or digital mm-hmm. signatures, those kinds of technologies. But, you know, as I say, that and pay systems are tremendous undertakings. I've heard it compared to widening all the nation's roads 6 inches, mm-hmm. you know, just a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it would be.
But something like that, you know, getting authentication may be what's required. And as I was giving a talk up on Capitol Hill,
Let me stop you. I've got to stop you. And I tell you what, folks, when we come back, Wayne's going to give a speech later on this weekend.
Right.
And when we come back, I want Wayne to give us a little bit of a thumbnail about what his speech is about. I think you're going to find it interesting. And that's right after these messages. Tintel, don't go away. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Wayne Cruz is our guest. He's Director of Technology Studies at the Cato Institute. And Wayne, you're going to Dallas, I think, in a little while to go there to give a speech to some folks. I think the SBA is sponsoring a panel out there. You're going to be doing a speech to them, and I wanted you to give our audience a little bit of a preview of what you're going to be talking about out there.
Okay, well, as you know, I do the 10,000 Commandments report on regulatory trends every year, and what's happening this weekend is the U.S. Association for Small Business and Entrepreneurship is putting on a conference in Dallas. SBA is taking part in this event and is putting on a panel on regulatory costs and the impact on business. So I'm going to go out there, like I enjoy doing, I like talking about this stuff, but talk about regulatory reform and what can be done. And this is something that's been debated for a long, long time. But, you know, my interest is saying what we need for the regulatory state is to at least make regulators accountable in the same way that legislators are for the tax burden, because regulation is just a hidden tax. So we have to have better disclosure and accountability. Now, I'll run through a lot of the recommendations I have, for example, in 10,000 Commandments. There's lots of data out there about regulations and their number and their cost that's not being reported on by the mm-hmm. government, and it could be. And if it was reported, it would give small businesses and third parties and interest groups something to anchor to when they needed to make a case for regulatory reform or for relief.
You call it regulation without representation, don't you?
I call it regulation without representation. And so what I'll be doing is I'll make the case for the government's doing a report card on regulation at the same time every year that it does the federal budget.
Mm-hmm.
So you have both the fiscal budget and, you know, in quotes, the regulatory budget, so to speak.
Because the regulatory money, the money that the regulations costs are an insidious hidden expense that's eating us alive.
It's eating us alive, and it gets passed down to consumers. And you've probably had, I know you've had SBA folks own talking about how if you have a given regulation that all the companies have to meet, it's an extra burden on small business because they've got lower sales to pass it around, fewer employees to spread the cost around.
Tom Sullivan was on earlier this week.
He may be there this weekend, but yeah, it's a disproportionate burden to small business. So the regulatory state needs to take a look at small business impacts too, which is something I'll be discussing. But the regulation without representation notion basically is this: we at least can vote out legislators who pass high taxes or who do anything we disapprove of. You don't have that kind of connection to regulators. They pass regulations. Congress never looks at what they do except in oversight hearings, and suddenly their regulations are binding. But you don't elect
right. The
regulators or the bureaucrats who make those regulations. So what we're saying as far as accountability and no regulation without representation is when you have regulations that are questionable or where they can't justify a benefit cost analysis, or it's controversial, like lead abatement rules, for example, or any number of environmental rules that you might talk, or mad cow legislation,
right.
regulation for that matter. Have those controversial rules go back to Congress for approval, so that if the costs are exorbitant or the benefits are low, you have somebody who's answerable.
At least there's a debate.
At least they were talking.
It's not just something that a bureau decided to work on so they could perpetuate their own organization.
Absolutely. See, right now, a congressman can pass loosely worded legislation, whether it's Americans with Disabilities or Clean Air Act amendments or food labeling, and then just leave it up to regulators to write the rule. Well, the congressman never has to answer for what the regulators do. If he'll stand up before public interest group and say, well, I voted for this law and, how great for me. But then when business groups or consumers complain about the cost, they'll just say, well, those agencies are out of control. There's a disconnect between the ability to make the law and the responsibility for it. So that's why we make our push for a lot more accountability and regulation.
Is the transcript of your speech going to be posted anywhere?
It may be. I'll try to get you one, and we can talk about
I've got you. I've got your notes here, but I just wondered if maybe it was something that ultimately would be on the website that maybe our folks can go check out.
I don't think I've posted it yet, but what I'll try to do is I may try to clean it up and post it later on.
I'd like to see that, and let me know, and I'll make sure the audience knows that that's available.
Okay.
Wayne, thank you for being here. Good luck on your speech. I know you'll wow them out there, as you always do, and keep up the good work helping people know about how much regulations are costing us and how to...
Yeah, always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Wayne Cruz, ladies and gentlemen, with the Cato Institute. He'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post around the world on our behalf. God bless you. God be with you. We are proud of you. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.